This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk on Devil Radio 92.7. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Educated educators talking education.
Oh, welcome back, Tuesday. It is Tim. It is Johnny. There he is, man. He was freaking me out. I'm like, where's the Johnny Lupinacci? I mean, we gave him off 2 weeks with, you know, whatever kind of ailment it was. We won't share with those screens. But Johnny, welcome back, man.
Oh, man, I'm back. You can go ahead. We could share live because, I mean, I think it's incredibly human and part of our humility to just admit that COVID is real.
Okay.
And even though people aren't reporting it always or are sharing it as I just have a cold, I caught the cold and took the test. And sure enough, it was the COVID. And this time, man, really knocked me out. So it was like a good week or so that I was not 100% and just keeping up because, as you know, we've got the wonderful guidelines from the CDC that say after 5 days, you're good to go. I was not good to go after those 5 days. It was more like about 8 or 9 of being pretty close to out of commission. And then I've been easing back in. But I'm glad to be back with you tonight, Tim. And
yeah, man, we got a return guest.
Yes.
You know, John Warner. John, you know what? I just got to just to give people John Warner. He's a writer, editor, speaker, researcher, consultant, and author of 8 books, including Why They Can't Write, Killing the 5-Paragraph Essay and Other Necessities, and The Writer's Practice, Building Confidence in Your Nonfiction Writing. John has become a national voice on issues of faculty labor, institutional values, and writing pedagogy. He's also the writer and advisor for Educational Endeavors and provider of extracurricular academic enrichment services, and writes a weekly column for the Chicago Tribune about books and writing. His most recent book is Sustainable, Resilient, Free, the Future of Public Higher Education. John Warner, welcome back to Busted Pencils. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Very happy to be back. And I'm glad to see Johnny is back among the active and living, and that I feel like I'm one of the few people that has not yet, knocking on wood 1,000 times, gotten COVID.
Well, I know for sure that I haven't gotten COVID because I've never taken a test. So that's a guarantee that I haven't gotten it. Right. You know, I mean, you know, that's one of those. If you want to make sure that you don't have something, you don't go for the verification.
Sure.
And that, I'm just, you know, just saying it. Oh, but we're back. And John, I had to have you back on. I put this, you know, the message out. We said, so, you know, we're going to revisit a topic. And if you want to jump in and join us, it's 844-967-2789, 844-962-7789. But it's like anybody who's listening is going, really, you guys are talking about this again? Of course we are, because everybody else is talking about it again. The NAEP scores. I know it was like just in September where Johnny and I thought we had fixed the world on how the rest of us or how the rest of the world should interpret these scores. But it 1 month goes by and here we are again. Time for another lesson. NAEP scores drop. John, though, and Johnny, this is going to be a surprise to you, but learning loss, and John kind of shared this with me during the pre-show. John is the example of true learning loss, he found out. I mean, you have documented proof that you have lost substantial learning.
Yes.
So lay it out for us, John.
On a test that is highly standardized and validated, no less. It's supposed to be the creme de la creme of these things, the SAT, the Scholastic Aptitude Test. Last year, I retook them, both the verbal and the math SATs, because I spend a lot of time criticizing these things. the test has evolved over the years. I know it's changed since I took it. The SAT I took was really a vocabulary test primarily, which played to my strengths. So I thought, like, what would happen? How would I do? And not as well. I was quite good at them in high school. They were sort of the same thing that saved me because of a fairly mediocre academic track record, grade-wise, but I was always good at these standardized tests. And the verbal I dropped around 100 points, but the math is really where things went off the rail. I dropped almost 200 points in my math score. You know, a lot of it is, and, you know, I wrote articles about this at my Educational Endeavor Substack, and I sort of debriefed with the Educational Endeavors folks, like who tutor students how to do well in these things. And they're like, yeah, you don't know how to take these tests anymore. Like, A, you forgot for math particularly, you just don't know how to do a bunch of math that you probably could hack through when you were in high school. A bunch of the algebra stuff that I've not used since high school. And B, you don't know how to take these tests anymore. You're unfamiliar with this, the format, and you miss some real bunnies that I got wrong. But apparently I'm significantly dumber than I was in high school.
I was going to say, you know, and we, you know, however long ago that was, you know, we're not going to reveal ages here. Long time, but
class of 88.
Class of 88. So there it is, Johnny Lupinacci. We've got a guest on tonight who is admitting fully to being a learning loss victim over the past close to 30 years. John has lost significant amount of learning. I'm surprised you're still allowed to write your blog and your books. And Johnny, I just want to say, I'm kind of wondering, geez, we should have learned this before we asked them to come on the show.
Well, but to be fair, you know, the math teacher in me is both cringing, but also like, see, I told you, because, you know, John dropped in his math scores. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's kept up with the other things and is certainly shown through track record that his writing and verbal skills have not been, you know, part of this learning loss. So it reminds me of like that whole math teacher in me cringe, because at one end, I'm like, oh no, of course you just validated all of the argument my students would make. We're never going to need this, and it's not going to be applicable to our careers. On the flip of that, how we teach math overwhelmingly is not for lifelong learning, and is not in ways that stay. We know this. We have evidence around it. Is not ways that stay in our head. So part of me was also cheering, because I was like, see, John isn't just a victim. He's also living proof of the whole thing that we say, we got to teach math differently, because if we teach it in meaningful ways, then, you know, John doesn't become a victim of learning loss when he retakes the ACT.
I almost snapped my head off nodding while you were talking, because that really is the story. I've had to learn math, particularly statistics, as a grown up for career and mm-hmm. various jobs I've had. And if I had a kind of fundamental appreciation for math, for reasoning through math, for thinking in mathy ways, I would have had a much easier time with all of that. And then when I got back and did some algebra that I might not have done in 30, 35 years, I probably would not have struggled so mightily with that kind of stuff. I could have, particularly in a standardized exam where they give you multiple choices, I bet I could have reasoned my way through many of those questions and narrow down an answer, rather than like, I don't remember this equation. I don't know how to solve this. So it's spot on. I mean, the notion that I had internalized that I was kind of bad at math, right? Like I could fake it until you make it, but I never made it. If I had been introduced to math in different ways, I probably would have a different relationship with that subject and that skill. Well,
right now. And for another show, Tim, and we can even have John back on, but we'll get a team of math teachers, because for a lot of years, and I'm not the only one doing this or saying this, and I'm not even a math ed guy. I just kind of end up in that category because I taught math, but I taught math as a foreign language. And I also taught math through a lens of what is the craft and art that math shows us of the world as a language. And so the goal I'd have for students, and I'm not alone, there were other math teachers that did this, is like we would teach you to be fluent in Spanish or in Italian, how could you learn the language of mathematics, both for its limitations and what it illuminates in the world? And so it gave a critical lens to it as well. And we taught a lot of statistics, because obviously we all always knew lifelong piece is being able to be literate in how these statistics come to fruition and which ones to really follow and how the numbers can sometimes illuminate particular things and hide other things. So it's a real master. It's a language that if you have mastery of it, you can do both good and harm with. So
well, I'm going to say, right. What a nice way to kind of bring us back to the topic here, because here we are, NAEP scores again, and how we read these and the way the that
numbers.
That were portrayed. And it's just, you know, John and Johnny, we've stated it, but hear it again. It's, you know, learning loss. It's absolutely conclusive now that math scores dropped across NAEP, reading scores dropped, however, but math scores dropped. It sounds like the potential for explaining the math score drop is a little bit easier in the sense that I don't think anybody is debating that the standard of going to school during the pandemic was essentially churn. We don't know what it was. It was masked. It was not in face. It was in person. It was hybrid. It was churn. You know, C-H-U-R-N was the standard. And so when you're talking about math, it's like, well, of course kids forgot math because it is one of those skills. And sadly, Johnny, because I think what you're saying is that it's still not being taught as you as a master teacher teaching it as a language. But over that time, though, the math dropped and the reading dropped. And we also are being presented, though, with the, you know, and Peter Green said this, you know, the pearl clutching mentality of, oh my God, what are we going to do about this? And I was just thinking, though, all the, oh my gods, what are we going to do about this? I don't think I've noticed that any of the, oh my God, what are we going to do about these would qualify as an educated educator who knows how to talk education. That's my issue that we're thinking about, and there's lots of ways to see this, but when my neighbor has to listen to, and let's just bring up the Atlantic article, Emily Oster, and sees Emily Oster, brown economist, on CNN in the morning, letting my neighbor know how horrible this test score drop is, then wow, what are we going to do about that? So, you know, what a segment. We're coming right up to the edge here as we're about to head off to our first commercial. But it's just like, how do we put this? How do we frame this? Man, learning loss. We already know our guest, John Warner, has significant learning loss. When we get back, though, how do we make sense of this in the media? Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, back after the break. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. The number, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. We are talking with our return guest, John Warner, who's suffered significant learning loss since he took the SAT back in, well, he already let us know, in 1988. Learning loss, the NAEP scores, here we all are all looking at the pearl clutching. OMG, what are we going to do about it? I left the segment, though, and going, the problem is that I see about this is that most of the dire warnings that come out from this, and I was wondering, John, if you might comment on this, we referenced Emily Oster from Brown, the Brown economist, who seems to be one of the go-to people to debate, or not even debate, but to tell my neighbor and me what to think about these test scores. And I'm just like, you know, back to the tagline of Busted Pencils, educated educators talking education. Why the hell don't they reach out to an educator for comment on this?
Well, John. If you guys recall, the last time you had me on, it was about in the context of that New York Times article about right. What a school is for, that not a single teacher was asked to respond to, right? There's something about how we view schools where we have decided that the last people we want to ask is teachers. Teachers are their employees of the public, in the public's view. They are beholden to the whims of the public. I just read a terrifying article in New Yorker this afternoon about some school board races in various places, and to these maniac so-called parents' rights organizations just wreaking havoc with their own school districts. The problem with that when we're looking at something like the NAEP scores is all of these things need deep, deep context to really understand the significance of them and to have a substantive discussion about what we can do to help students recover from what's going on, because clearly bad stuff happened, right? A pandemic happened. Students were disrupted. They were not in school. They were not around their friends. They may have had loved ones get sick and die in the worst case scenarios. Even today, school may be disrupted by their own illness or a classmate's illness or a teacher's illness. You know, Johnny was just out for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. These things are all ongoing. So the urge to like go to these economist gurus who want to tell you how school should work while having no familiarity with the on-the-ground operations of school or teaching is sort of the worst of all worlds, and yet it's absolutely the way that things go. And you know, we were talking before we came on the air. From my point of view, it's often these people that will reinforce what a certain status quo wants to hear about schools. They bring these people on, they confirm what they think they know, and they talk about students and about teachers without talking with students and with teachers.
Well, Johnny, jump in.
Oh, I mean, I'm excited. I mean, this is exactly what we're trying to get into here is, you know, when we do say things like learning loss, what are we implying by them? And I like that John brought it up. We should be incensed and wondering what actually happened if kids weren't showing some kind of drop in test scores. I mean, because John hit the nail on the head. Every single person had been trying to learn in a survival mode. And one of the things that we did not, there's no silver lining to a global pandemic, but if we take learning moments, right, from it, it's that we learned that for a lot of kids already, learning in that survival mode wasn't ideal. And so we were seeing less than ideal learning opportunities for a lot of kids. Then you map that onto nearly every child in the world, really, right? And then to expect anything other than some drops in these valid and reliable tests, which I'm happy to admit, statistically, they're valid and reliable. There's wonderful assessment qualities about these tests. But then the responsibility falls to, what do we do with the information that the numbers tell us, right? And so it should be like, is the water wet? Yep, the water is wet. Did children experience a loss in learning during being in complete survival mode and experiencing likely all of them a new level of trauma added on to some of their already existing survival learning situations? Right. So if we didn't see a drop, then something would have been completely awry with what we were all experiencing. It would be the ultimate gaslighting from assessment. But we got some really validating information that things were incredibly difficult for children and for teachers, at a minimum, those two groups, right? And we can have evidence in the numbers. The data can show us that this is true. Now, what we do with those numbers is really important. And John brings us back to, like, who's asked about what do we do with these numbers? Who's applying that data to the decisions that are being made?
Well, so that is the question. Who do you ask for this, right? And so the go-to, it seems to be anybody other than, John, you say a teacher, but an educator. And I'd say maybe even potentially saying, okay, look, a teacher maybe isn't the best person on this, but are there experts in educational assessment, you know? And so I think of my friend Christopher Tinkin, who is an absolute brilliant person who can really throw down when it comes to trying to understand standardized testing. You know, here's the guy who should be all over the media for any time when you say, what does this mean, Chris? And they would come in and go, well, here's what it means. It might not mean anything other than the fact that, hey, guess what? It's actually mirroring what happened in the fact that kids were out of school a lot. Kids were in a churn. It was a sad time. It was a hard time. Or as Johnny said, it was survival time. So the test scores show us exactly that. They tell us the story of a pandemic. But, you know, it's again, why we ask, who we ask. But the pearl clutching or the hysteria, and when we get back, let's kind of jump right into that, the hysteria of the moment, because how do we help my neighbor understand that Emily Oster is not who you listen to? Educated Educators is who you listen to. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, back after the break. Oh, it's Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. Well, here on Busted Pencils, that's what's always happening on CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Anytime they're talking education, who knows who's talking, but it is usually not an educated educator who talks education all the time. Johnny Lupinacci over there, out there in the state of Washington. John Warner, our guest. John, down in Virginia?
South Carolina.
North Carolina. That's yeah. Right. North Carolina. Evan, our producer in Madison, Wisconsin. And, you know, me, Tim, I'm here in Ohio. The magic, though, that we learned over the pandemic is that you can do really cool radio shows from just about anywhere. So Zoom, actually, we learned a lot over the pandemic about how to make radio really awesome. But okay, John, so pearl clutching, NAEP scores drop, NAEP scores drop, math being one of the significance. Emily Oster, the economist from Brown, tells us it's a historic, and quote, that's her, it's a historic drop. And we were talking, it's like, well, why do we care? And here's the point, though, John, too, that you and I talked about before the show. There's a, if you read the real breakdown of the scores, particularly the math, okay, they quote dropped over the years of the pandemic. However, there in some places you'll hear, you know, it's a historic low. And I think you said it's like, so at 2005 is when the last time we recorded those math scores. And so does that mean then that all of the fourth graders in 2005 were just really, really dumb? And are they walking around homeless today? I mean, you know, what does that, how do you feel if you're a fourth, if you were a fourth grader in 2005 and people are saying, man, kids are as dumb as you were?
This, you know, this is part of the trouble with these, relying on these exams to do more than they really should or can, right? I think Johnny makes a good point, made a good point earlier, that these tests are what we would call valid. They are statistically sound. They are internally validated. So year to year, you do see these changes and you say, okay, students did better this year than they did in a previous year. But the idea that this score is somehow destiny, that this score is somehow marks you for a life of either riches or penury is sort of ridiculous.
Right.
We are a nation at risk generation. The famous report put out by Ronald Reagan's Department of Education that said we were about to be swamped by a rising tide of mediocrity in our schools. Right. We're here, right? we survived. It's not that I think any of us believe we shouldn't try to help students learn more each year or do better on these sorts of things year after year. But the idea that there's some sort of baked in destiny based on the score you get at this time is not true. It's not a sort of fixed disaster. And the score by itself doesn't tell us anything that the experience of the pandemic, as we've been talking already, doesn't tell us to begin with, which is things were really messed up. And the score is really a validation of things that were disrupted. We went to school under a major disruption, and that is true. There are going to be knock-on effects for this for years. There's an article in the New York Times today about the students who've gone to college and are struggling with certain aspects of college.
Right.
That's just the, we just have to deal with that, right? Like, you have to teach the students you have, not the students you wish you had. So if students have been through something that have caused them to be in a place that is not where they were in the past or not as desirable as we wished, that's the job of educators. Educators educate. Let's do our jobs.
What about this, though, Johnny? You're thinking about this, John and Johnny, both of you. You know, isn't this, though, really, again, just simply saying, look, public schools and teachers, you stink. This is an opportunity here to throw, dirt, throw tomatoes, throw rotten vegetables at public schools and teachers. And any opportunity there is to lay, you know, some kind of left hook into the this idea. And, you know, that big almost knockout punch in 1983, The Nation at Risk, as you say, John. But, you know, it's interesting because in 2022, we're here, we're more successful, we're quote, more wealthy, you know, from every, quote, standard measure of living, things are better. 1983 we didn't fall off the boat. But for some reason, though, that the persistence of public schools and teachers, you stink, you have been failing us forever. Isn't this just another opportunity to just continue that?
The amazing thing is how quickly this turned, right? Like early in the pandemic, when we were doing, almost everybody was doing remote schooling and parents were able to sort of eavesdrop on the incredible yeoman work many teachers were doing, trying to keep something going under these impossible circumstances. You'd hear all over the place, like, I can't imagine trying to do this as a teacher, right? Who have their own kids at home and their own struggles, and they're also going through a pandemic. And teachers were being treated as heroes at the time.
Right.
Anytime teachers become heroes, though, there are forces that want to come up and say, no, 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 teachers are the enemy. Teachers unions are the enemy. Public schools are the enemy and need to be brought to heel, or even better, movements among the right and conservative factions that want to create kind of a universal voucher system so anybody can take their educational contribution and go use it out in whatever school they want. These forces are highly organized. These forces are happy to align themselves with people like Emily Oster when it serves them. They're happy to discard people like Emily Oster when it doesn't. And teachers, unfortunately, in schools have no countervailing force because they're too busy doing their jobs to fight the BS.
What do you mean no countervailing force, John? Where there's busted pencils every Tuesday night out right, there. Right.
This is the thing. We have individuals who are trying to spread the word, as you always say to your neighbor, how do I get my neighbor to understand this stuff? But this is, you know, it's very outgunned against organizations like the American Enterprise Institute or the Fordham Institute, where they have people who are paid literally hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to undermine public schools. This is their jobs.
Yeah.
And it's these sorts of scores are handy bludgeons for them to pick up and club schools over the head with. So they will. And the idea that they're going to be honest brokers for this information, I think, is a fantasy. And yet they are treated as such by publications and journalists which are attempting to be honest brokers. And this, as you can see, I'm getting a little worked up.
No, and because,
crazy.
Yeah, that's the issue right there, right? Because if you were an honest journalist, CNN, when you're interviewing one of these people who actually, you should be able to see through and go, hey, you're just using this to take pot shots at public schools. You're not really giving Slecker's neighbor any new information to help him. You're using this. That's what drives me insane, is to say, mainstream, and here, you know, sound like a righty, you know, conservative lambasting the mainstream media, but on education, the mainstream media is horrible. They are not our friends, because any opportunity to call out somebody on that and say, wait a minute, is this really what it means, Emily Oster? Does it really mean that things are this bad? Because, you know, we're looking at, in fact, kids who have scored lower on that test at one point, and they're successful business people today. So those test scores that you're saying are these significant declines, we have evidence that people that got lower test scores that are doing really, really well. So as a journalist, if I'm an education journalist, I should have those chops. Johnny Lupinacci, I want you to be an education journalist one day.
Maybe someday. I don't know. Like, I'm still always trying to figure out how we just get these teachers better prepared for the work that they're going out there and doing the best they can. And yeah, maybe at some point helping out on that line so that we get better information to the general public who continually keep taking shots or getting misinformed by people taking shots at teachers working really hard, right?
There are some, I do want to note a couple of glimmers of hope I saw on this front. There's an article by a guy named J. Caspian Kang, who used to be at the New York Times and is now at the New Yorker. He wrote a piece titled America's Falling Test Scores and the Power of Parental Anxiety, where he actually adds some interesting context to this, right?
Right. I saw that.
He talks about, you know, the drop in the scores is expected, and it's maybe not as catastrophic as we think. And that a lot of it really is this narrative that comes around it is really about sort of the anxiety of primarily upper middle class white parents who are kind of an easy mark for a lot of these things because they are so invested in their children and their children's well-being. Justifiably so, but they're ready to freak out about this stuff because they're concerned about these things. But one thing we know from these NAEP scores historically is those are the students that are historically best positioned to weather these sorts of disruptions.
Right.
They should be less freaked out than anybody else. There was another article in, I think it was The Atlantic by, which is ironic because that's where Emily Oster's piece ran, I think it was by Derek Thompson, that was basically taking the same, a similar angle, like things are not as bad as we think, right? Like it's been disruptive, it's been bad, but we can recover, it's not a catastrophe.
Well, so yeah, that's it. Even just that, the ability to for somebody to possibly interject in one of these interviews and going, but you know, really, Emily, isn't it possible that everybody's going to be just fine? You know, even just to hear somebody say, is it possible that these test scores don't indicate Armageddon? You know, right. It's like, you know, just some form of a little bit of, you know, doubt in the fact of when I'm, you know, looking at the media and critiquing the media, saying, I would just really like the media to occasionally express some doubt in the
or some nuance, right? Like like when I wrote my blog post about NAEP, like I had people writing me emails saying that I must hate students in America and all this kind of stuff. It's like, no, it's the opposite. I dedicate a huge chunk of my life to trying to help students, but I know one way to help them is not to lose our heads around these things. We have to be sensible about it. Nobody is denying that bad stuff happened. Everybody knows that bad stuff happened, but we can recover from these things and we can do right by our students. And sort of losing our minds about a single test, a single score that it has never been anybody's destiny.
Right.
It's absolutely the wrong way to think about these problems. It actually keeps us from addressing the problems as they are.
It keeps us from addressing the problems. And I said this because we were starting to, before the pandemic, quote, talk about the gaps in test scores, which when we were talking about gaps really indicate which kids have not been served well for the longest time. What are the reasons behind why those kids are not served well? And in fact, we knew this from the pandemic. The pandemic laid bare the fact that, holy crap, kids don't have internet at home. Oh my God, those hero teachers who are also teaching online are delivering lunches to the kids who don't have food at home. All of those things were finally being exposed. And even on this round of NAEP scores, at a minimum, we could have said, wow, and the gaps for those kids who were always kind of left behind are even more significantly large. Are we going to use this moment, Johnny and I have talked about this, are we going to use this portal moment to say, and enough is enough? the reality is. And instead, though, we're just going to reinforce the status quo.
Yeah, the NAEP didn't cause any new problem for education. The NAEP intensified and fractured some of the existing ones, but there's no new problem that this exposes. It's really what we already knew about what causes these gaps.
Well, there's no new problem, and especially when John Warner is the guest on Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. The number is 844-967-2789. John, thank you for your time again tonight. When we get back, Johnny and I will kind of break it down. If you want to jump in, though, give us a call. It's Busted Pencils. It's Fully Leaded. And again, John Warner, thanks for being a guest on Busted Pencils.
Hey, back. My pleasure. Anytime, guys.
Sure. Back after the break. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Educated educators talking education, actually talking learning loss, learning gains. We're not exactly sure, according to Johns Hopkins University pediatrician on Fox News. It's a tragic learning loss that was revealed last week when 9-year-olds across the country, their test scores over the past 2 years in reading and math showed a decline. That was according to also after 20 years of gains, there was a decline. I was wondering about pointing this out, Johnny, but I think it is worth saying this for the moment. You know, another way, you know, we want to be excited about everything that we learned, but just for another reflection point, for the fact that test scores declined is no indicator that decline is what's now happening. In fact, over those, quote, 20 years of gains, if you look closely at the actual test scores year to year over those 20 years, guess what they do year to year? They bounce up, they bounce, guess which way? Down. And then they bounce up a little higher, and then they bounce down a little bit lower. And then sometimes they do a quick spike up, sometimes they spike down. But over 20 years, we talk about this in statistics, when you look at that as a plotted line graph, it shows an incline over time, right? It shows an incline. But when you look closely at the year-to-year data, it looks more like an up and down hill ride, because the reality is that there's not a just, quote, steady incline. It's a trend over a time period. And so the fact that, you know, not saying that these test scores aren't telling us something. In fact, they probably are telling us that the churn of teaching and learning during a global pandemic did not really work well with producing the great test scores. However, though, a decline over such a long period of time really isn't an indicator of anything other than it's a decline, because who knows the next time we get test scores. You know, we want to see over a 5-year period, because when we look at test scores and we use them as important data points and not as demarcations of the end of the world, when we use this type of data usefully, we look at 5 years, 10 years, because we're looking at data to say, how are things going over time, over long periods of time? And if we see an upward, we're like, okay, things seem to be doing okay on test scores, on some type of reading instruction, on some type of a math instruction. It seems like kids are making gains. We don't know the whole story, but it seems like at least on some form of an instructional level, kids are somehow, when they're taking tests, are doing better than they used to, okay? Nice, healthy way to look at test score data, to talk about it that way. Mm-hmm. However, to look at and make any type of claim of year-to-year data, which is not, that's bad science, man. That's not science. That's cherry picking to make a narrative. And that's what we have here in this hysteria, is a narrative creation around schools failing, but we know better because the fact that the students showed up this year, the teachers showed up this year, oozing, gotta love that word. Teachers and students showing up back to school this year, oozing with excitement to get back into it. Where's that headline on CNN, MSNBC, Fox News? You know, wouldn't it have been great to have come off of Friday's, you know, the drastic headlines and come back with some story? You know, so we do it here. You know, this big media outlet, Busted Pencils, we tell you what's happening. But I would have loved if somebody said, you know what, we just heard on Busted Pencils, test scores declined on Friday. However, we heard on Monday, parents, kids, teachers are oozing with excitement after a global pandemic to get back at it. Oh my goodness. Can you imagine that headline? I want to be a guest on that show to talk about that, because how many experts would we actually pull to talk about oozing with excitement? Johnny, again, we try to frame things so that people have the ability to go, huh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. At a minimum, when you're listening to Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, you're walking away from this show going, huh, I didn't know that. And you know what? If that's what you get, we have been successful and we're happy. A little bit of time left, though. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. The call is free, unlike the shopping cart at Aldi's. At Aldi's, you still need to put a quarter in your shopping cart if you have an Aldi's around you. You don't need to put a quarter in to make the phone call here to Busted Pencils. Evan gave me that nice two-minute mark, so it's going to be tough for somebody to call in right now, but you know, we would take it. We would move along. We could handle the stress.
But otherwise, you know, you can just tune in, listen, and on Tuesdays, give us a call, because we love to hear from you. And especially when we can talk education with folks who are out there listening, because what you know and experience also contributes to what we all put to work all the time when we're working with teachers, schools, and communities. You know, and Tim, you reminded me of that important focus that is not new, mm-hmm. but that comes out of from the region, right? From the region of great educators. And you want to end us? You want to end the show?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about that? You. I mean, thinking
it's
about
always
this.
An inspiring one.
It's always inspiring. You know, we got that. You know, Evan, thank you for another great show and great music. We love that. But you know, we've heard about the possibility that some teachers and some schools, you know, going out on strike. And like, what's this all about? Well, we talked about this. You know what? We're hearing that some of the conditions that we did learn during the pandemic. You know what? We need better air systems. We need this. And so when you hear teachers leading with, and I love this, you know, Karen Lewis, we miss you so much, Chicago Teachers Union. She taught me this. You know what? As a union, we lead with what's best for kids and communities, because that's how we make a difference. That's how we make a substantial change. Well, right now, when you hear educators out there leading with, we need, what they're talking about is what's best for your kids, what's best. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, back next week.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils, or log on to BustedPencils.com for blogs, podcasts, and more. Join us again next Tuesday for Busted Pencils on Devil Radio 92.7.
Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
We are Busted Pencils.